You're listening to the Social Work Me podcast with your hosts, Matt Barnes and Julie Carter.
Oh my God. Welcome back to the Social Work Me podcast with your host, Matt Barnes. And this is episode 15 and one of my favorite episodes to date. Today's guest is Brenly Shapiro, who is a social worker from Toronto. And she's a sports psychology and performance consultant, a cognitive behavioral psychotherapist, and a certified sports vision trainer. She's the first female mental performance coach for the Arizona Coyotes in the NHL, as well as the OHL for the Peterborough Petes. Recently, Brenly has signed on as the mental performance coach for the men's and women's Chinese national hockey teams for the upcoming 2022 Beijing Olympics. Brenly is an author, and we're going to talk about her book Fearless on today's episode. She's also the founder of Heads Up High Performance in Toronto. Brenly has recently launched a completely done-for-you team training program for coaches and trainers, which if you sign up for now, you'll also get individual coaching sessions with Brenly, as well as a bunch of amazing bonuses included in the package. We talk a little bit about this on the episode, so stay tuned for more information on how you can bulk up your training and coaching skills with working with elite athletes and teams. And a quick note from our sponsors before the show. With so many practice management options available, it can be hard to know who to trust with your data. Owl Practice takes the security of your data very seriously. Owl servers are located in Toronto and Montreal. They use bank-level encryption, and your data is continuously backed up. The entire Owl Practice team is located in Canada as a Canadian company for Canadian mental health practitioners run by Canadians. All Social Work Me listeners will get their first month free with Owl using the promo code SocialWorkMe. So head over to owlpractice.ca/socialworkme.php for more details. And this episode is brought to you by Rebel Office, an online resource center for entrepreneurs, including mentorship, strategy building, and graphic and web design services. To get in touch with Rebel Office about elevating your practice, visit rebeloffice.ca and let them know that Social Work Me podcast sent you for some amazing discounts. Finally, this podcast would only be possible with the support of Southwest Counseling Services in Sarnia, Ontario. All right, let's get to the show with our guest, Brenly Shapiro.
How does that make you feel?
Don't social work me.
Hi there.
Hey, Brenly, how's it going?
Hey, hang on a second. I'm good. How are you?
Good. So happy that you could do this and take some time. And
yeah,
it's great to talk to you.
I love your questions. So I'm excited for the chat. It'll be fun.
Right on. Well, yeah. So I sort of found you online. I've been working with the Sarnia Sting for the last few years, and I was just Googling, you know, mental coaching in the OHL, and you were the first and only person that came up. So I was like, wow, this is really cool. And then to dig a little bit deeper and find out you have a social work background, and just to see all the amazing and progressive things that you're doing in Toronto, kind of led me to reach out to you. And so I'm just pumped to ask you some questions and hear about how things are going with you. And I guess it's a strange time right now.
It is. Sure.
But maybe we'll start off, like, can you talk a little bit about what your world looks like and what your work looks like right now, and a little bit about how you got to where you're at now?
Sure. So now, I mean, you're right. It is definitely a strange time. Things have obviously changed for me, but my work has transitioned quite nicely because I do a lot of work virtually anyways. You know, I always say I'm just one person and I tend to be a little bit all over the place. So, you know, the virtual world has been my friend in terms of accessing athletes from all over the world. So really, you know, I had a large group that that was online anyways. So I really just took everything online. And that's how everything's been, whether it's, you know, meetings with athletes, meetings with the Coyotes, draft meetings, it doesn't really matter. Just everything's been virtual. So we've made it all work. And, you know, things have been busy for me. I think, you know, COVID has been a time where certainly for my athletes, you know, the number one thing they tell me is that they're bored. And I know there's been a lot of downtime for people. I personally have not had that. So, you know, it's still been busy, but, yeah. But everything online.
That's awesome. And, yeah. And how did you get to this point? I mean, it sounds like you started out in private practice.
Yeah, I did. So, I mean, if I go way, way back, I'll give you sort of the whole backstory. You know, I'll take you even to, I say it's my story because I think we all have a story and it's just kind of about finding your story and what drives you. You know, growing up, I always had a love for sport. And particularly a love for hockey. So I always wanted to play, but there was really no opportunity for me to play when I was young. So I ended up doing other sports. I played soccer. I was a dancer. And, you know, I talk about this defining moment for me, which was in grade one when I went to school. And I remember the teacher going around the room and asking everybody what they wanted to be when they grew up. And I knew right away, I was so excited for my answer and I was just waiting for my turn. And it got to me and I jumped up and I was really proud to say that I wanted to be in the NHL. And the whole class laughed at me. And I remember this like excitement quickly deflated and I was kind of embarrassed. And, you know, everyone was laughing and giggling. You can't be in the NHL, you're a girl. And, you know, I kind of remember sitting down and being just disturbed and thinking, but like, why can you tell me, like, why not? You know, why can't I be? And so I didn't really know it at the time, but as I look back, I just think I really remember that feeling and thinking like, you know, I can do anything that I want to do. And, you know, it's funny, I may not play in the NHL, but I just found a different way to get there. And so, you know, I'm doing exactly what I had always wanted to do. And I actually, you know, have a profound role in drafting players and who gets to the NHL. So, you know, I think that was a part of driving force for me and just following a love and passion. So, you know, I took that passion for sport. And then I also always had, you know, a passion and an inkling to help people. And so through my schooling, you know, I did a psychology degree, did a social work degree, and I did start out in just a complete general practice. And so I just general counseling practice. And then it was kind of through my own children's experience in sport. And I started to see such a need, like there was so much pressure and demands and expectations, you know, from a young age. And so combined with sort of my background, it got me thinking about, well, you know, how can I support my own children? How can I help them thrive in this world, in this environment? You know, as I always had a love for hockey, my kids got into hockey. And, you know, I started working with a hockey coach who was kind of fascinated by what I did. And he asked me to do workshops in his camps. And I started out that way. And I loved it. I loved it. It was about taking two worlds that I was really passionate about and bringing them together. And like I said, there was such a need and it just took off and people started engaging and wanting more information and wanting me to work with their kids. And so I started bringing athletes into my own practice and I loved it. Like I loved doing that. And then I will say it was a lot more learning and educating myself and research and just taking what I did and my expertise and applying it to sport and performance. And a lot of trial and error from there and figuring it out and learning and failing. And I think loving it though, it was huge. And really I'd say at the end of it is just, you know, having a belief in myself that I could figure it out. And that's what I did. That's sort of what got me to where I am. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. And seeing, you know, and the social work field, I guess, opens up so many options and doors. Yeah. And you are living proof of that, of where you can go with this background. Yeah. And psychology and I guess everybody laughing, you know, in your younger years
kind of who's laughing now, I guess.
Right.
And I want to talk about your book, but I mean, that sets a real good stage for your book called Fearless.
Yeah.
Which I have some questions for you about, because I think it's a great book and really practical and some really great activities for people to do along the way throughout it.
Thank you.
But let's, you know, I guess, I don't know how sick of it you are, but I know I'm sort of tired of talking about COVID, but in the OHL world, we can't really avoid it with the delayed start to the season and things like that. So we're looking at a December start. What advice or strategies would you recommend to OHL players and maybe just athletes in general that are maybe struggling to prepare or to cope with all this uncertainty?
Yeah, it is a difficult time. Look, it's a difficult time for every athlete and just people in general. And I think everybody's struggling in their own way, whatever you might be struggling with. And I think that's normal because the world's sort of been turned upside down. So firstly, I always like to just validate their experience and what they're going through. And everybody's finding their way right now. And it's really, you know, I probably talk about it in my book is, you know, you got to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And the world has certainly made us uncomfortable right now. And nobody's navigated these waters. So it's all new. We can't look to anybody to figure out how to get through it. And so we're all finding our way. So I really do just try to validate the experience for them and then work together to, you know, find their way through and what's going to make sense and what's going to work for them. But if I just sort of make it a bit more generic, I think the biggest thing that I'm doing with athletes and people in general is, and to be honest, myself as well, just, you know, in my own world too, with my family, with my kids, is I just start by taking it one day at a time. You know, the picture is overwhelming. And like I said, we don't know what things are going to look like and things can change so fast right now. So I really try and pull back and focus on one day at a time. Like, what is in front of you now? What do you have to deal with today? What can you do today? So that's really a big focus of mine. And then, you know, what can you do today to get better? What kind of steps can you take? And I do think that a crisis, you know, it squeezes us. It forces us to think in ways that we haven't thought before, but it really can stimulate our creative mind. And so I try to be very creative and just brainstorming, you know, what are things that you can do that you maybe never have time to do? You know, for OHL guys, like they have, you know, the season is a grind and they have hectic schedules. So we have time on our hands right now, which really gives a unique opportunity that we don't tend to have. So what other areas of your game can you strengthen? How can you be creative? You know, what can you do to get better? And, you know, certainly I always will throw out the mental game. Like, what an opportunity right now. You know, you don't have a season. Everything's delayed. You can be in the gym and you can be working out. And a lot of my OHL guys have been doing a lot of golfing this summer. You know, but what an amazing opportunity to come back with like an ironclad mindset and imagine how that might strengthen your game. So there's lots of stuff that we can be doing. You just have to, you know, find the opportunity and the struggle, and it's there if you're willing to look for it. So
that's a great point.
Yeah.
Looking at this like a huge opportunity and like you said, focusing on the things you can control and day by day.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. Well, and I know you're super busy and you've got all these things going on, you know, the Mind Gym, which looks really cool. Coaching, individual work that you're doing with athletes, but you're also helping NHL teams to assess draft prospects through psychological profiling and assessments. Can you talk a bit about what goes into this process and how do you go about assessing players?
Yeah, so my work with the Coyotes has been exciting and challenging and innovative. And, you know, I'm just fortunate, I feel, really, to be a part of it. So My process with the draft usually starts like a year prior to the draft. So it's a lengthy process, and I will follow the draft prospects for the year. There's a number of different phases I go through, but you know, part of the work that I do initially is working with the scouts and designing interviews for them, because they're usually the first touch point with the players. So I work with the scouts on just good questions to ask, you know, how to get to know them a little bit better. How do we interview better, you know, better questions. And so I do that initially with the scouts, and then, you know, the scouts kind of set out to do their thing and incorporate some of the learning and strategies that I've done with them. And then I get information. So I kind of sit back at first and, you know, I just wait and I watch the prospects and follow them and then connect with the scouts, and, you know, we collaborate together. And then I start my process in terms of just different testing that I do with them. And I would say my job is to get to know, like, who are you? You know, who is the person behind the equipment? What makes you tick? What do you value? So I do a bunch of different testing with them. So I'm looking at all kinds of things, but again, just to really kind of figure out who they are. And then I'll look at all of that, and I actually try and create a picture in my mind based off all the information I gather. And that'll take me about halfway through the year. So then I'll study, you know, all the stuff that I have and really try to form a picture in my mind. And then the last part is I actually go out and interview them myself. So now I get to, you know, kind of see, am I on the right track? Am I getting valid information? And so I'll dig in on the information that I found out. I'll ask my own questions, and really, again, just an opportunity to get to know who they are. So I'll do that interview process. And then typically, although it didn't happen this year, I would end up at the NHL Combine, where I have a second touch point with the guys there, and I'll interview them again with our management team. And then we, you know, do some final meetings and picks and assessing, and, you know, we're really looking at the complete player, not just who they are on the ice and, you know, my stuff. And I collaborate a lot with management and with the scouts, you know, from their perspective, my perspective, and obviously we're looking for guys that can check all the boxes, for us. And then we head into the draft. So that's typically what that whole season will look like prior.
That's really unique. And I imagine for the players, I mean, maybe once they're told that Brenly's going to be following them and assessing them, there might be a little bit of nerves around that, or sort of, I mean, they're so used to being assessed physically and skill wise, but psychological testing, that's probably a new aspect for a lot of these guys.
It's new for them. It is happening in the NHL. And I think it's growing more and more, like more and more teams are starting to do stuff like that. Not all of them, but they're definitely starting. So, you know, these guys tend to get bombarded with questionnaires and things like that, not just from me, but from other teams as well. So I think they get used to it pretty fast.
Yeah.
You know, something that I always do try and stress, I always let them know that I think I'm different from most of the people that talk to them. So I am usually that first touch point. You know, usually it's scouts or maybe management that calls them or speaks to them. And so I'm usually that first touch point that's a little bit different. So I always just try and, you know, throw that right out there. Like, I'm probably different than anybody that's spoken to you thus far. But, you know, again, for me, I always stress there is no right answers and there's no wrong answers. And I think, you know, these are competitive guys, so they always want to do the right thing and win, so to speak. And, you know, with me, it's a little bit different. And I say, really, just, you know, just be you and do you and be honest. And, you know, you can't really go wrong. So that's my best advice for them.
Yeah, I like it. Well, and I bet, I mean, there's such a shift in the world and in hockey from maybe sort of old school thinking and leading with fear to shifting things. And, you know, as you look into the OHL, I mean, you're the only name that pops up as a mental performance coach. I heard you talk on another podcast about maybe butting heads a little bit with scouts around what we typically look at around players, how we assess them for the NHL. I don't know if butting heads is the right word.
Yeah, but I'm trying to remember which podcast. I think I know what you're talking about. But okay.
I can't remember which one it was, but there was two hosts, and I think yeah. One of them, there one guy was a coach.
Yeah.
And you had talked about kind of a tense moment in a mm-hmm. meeting. Mm-hmm. Do you find that you have to sell the psychological aspect or the mental skills piece of this still at this day and age?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it just depends on what room you're walking into and who you're talking to. So, you know, certainly with the Coyotes, you know, when I started, there was some of that for sure. We've done a lot of changes in terms of our culture. And so, you know, something that I stress a lot with the teams that I work with is, you know, you win with people. Like, I really believe that. And you can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have the right people. And so that's been something that I've been involved in as well, just, you know, kind of in all levels of the organization, hiring staff as well, and who we work with. So yes, it was definitely challenging originally in our room, but we have, you know, really worked hard to hire people that are in line with what we're trying to accomplish and the belief system and the values. So the room is completely different now. And it's amazing. Like, the culture has really grown and strengthened. And to be honest, at this point in my organization, I definitely don't feel that need anymore. I think that my opinion is highly valued. It's welcomed, it's embraced, it's listened to. And, you know, it's a huge part of our decision-making process. So, yeah, it's really become great. Now, not to say in other areas of hockey and maybe other teams. And, you know, I think it's still growing and it's still changing, but it's definitely moving in the right direction. So
good. No, I'm happy to hear that. And hopefully the OHL maybe there are more mental performance coaches in the OHL. It just doesn't seem to be something that's discussed or advertised outside of what the Peterborough Petes have been doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's slow to come. It's, I know that in the OHL, they have, an association with, I'm not sure what your connection is with Sarnia. Maybe you can speak a little bit about that, but you know, I think every team has like a mental health advisor that's now associated with the team. So there has been some growth in that area. But yeah, it's new still. And, you know, it's coming. It's coming. Interestingly enough, the WHL has, most every team has a mental performance coach. It's something that I found very interesting in my draft interviews, because I can always tell, you know, just in my conversations with them, I can tell if they've done some mental game work. So I'll always ask, oh, like, you know, have you done any training? And then they'll tell me that with their team, you know, they have somebody that they work with. So I found that very interesting. Like, there's a consistent theme from the WHL end where most of these guys are getting it with their teams as opposed to the OHL. So
nice.
Yeah,
I was sort of brought in just to give an overview 3 seasons ago of sports psychology. And then that sort of evolved. And my background with psychotherapy is really working with trauma. Okay. So helping players move past injuries.
Nice.
And then it's kind of grown from there to do more mental performance coaching or consulting, I guess you could say.
Amazing.
And
it's a soft spot for Sarnia too. My son was actually drafted to Sarnia. So.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have 3 boys? Is that?
I have 2 boys.
2 boys.
Yeah.
And one of them is in sports broadcasting, it sounds like.
Yes. He just graduated. So also, you know, challenging time in the sports world. So he just graduated from Ryerson sports media program and is, you know, job hunting. But again, you know, I say the same thing to him. You got to be a little creative and, you know, what can you create on your own? Because there's, you know, people in the sports world have been laid off and, you know, so you got to be creative.
Big time, especially right now.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about your book. I love the book. Like I said, I think it's so practical and I love the activities that you can do along the way. and, you know, the target thoughts and things. Just it's a great book for not just athletes, but just anybody wanting to improve their performance.
Yes, thank you.
You talk about three players, and I love these three different characters that you bring in because they seem very like not generic, but kind of like archetypes of players that you could see in any sport.
Yeah.
So the first one is Riley. And you talked about working with Riley, who has a really dominating father who motivates with fear, puts a lot of pressure, and kind of leaves his son feeling really angry and dreading going to play sports and really wanting to quit.
Yeah.
You know, it really reminds me of, you know, how many athletes can identify with that car ride home after games and just hearing it from parents. When you're working with athletes like Riley, at what point, if at all, would you bring the parent into the work that you're doing or involve them in the process?
Yeah. So I would, my hope would be to do that. I personally take it as a case by case scenario. But what I do really in terms of deciding if and how I'm going to do that is primarily with my relationship with my athletes. So it has to be something that they want to do and that they feel, excuse me, safe enough to do. As in the case with Riley, it was not ever a safe space. And so we didn't go there at all. But it is something that I would encourage if it was safe and the athlete felt ready to do that. So that's really my first indicator is, you know, throwing it out there, talking to them about it, letting them know really that it's something that I could do to help them and to advocate, you know, to be a stronger voice for them. And we could bring it in here and we could do it together. So I usually throw it out and kind of watch their reaction. And then, you know, often I'll let them sit with that. And, you know, I definitely stress it does not need to be now. It's just planting a seed. You know, this is something in the future that if you feel it would be helpful for you, then that's something that we could look at doing. So I kind of leave it like that. And then, you know, we'll check in along the way. And if and when they feel ready, you know, we continue that conversation. The next piece is the parent open to it? So, you know, truthfully, I think most parents are motivated to help their child. And that's why they would bring them to me in the first place. So, you know, it's, you really do have to assess their openness and again, their willingness to change. And like I say, most of the parents are like, they want to know if they're doing something wrong. They want to be able to help their athlete. They want to support them in the best way possible. You know, I talk about sort of this parent child, you know, sport relationship and dynamic is really, it's the recipe for a perfect storm. Like I say, I think people's motivation is good. Their parents' motivation is good. But, you know, sport is intense. It's emotional. And even if we took the kids out of the picture, you know, you just look at a sports fan in general. The word fan comes from the word fanatic. Like, and, you know, you have intense feelings and to your sports team and you're happy when they win and you're sad when they lose and you're angry when something happens and you have actually no personal connection to that, right? And so now throw the kids into the mix. Well, as a parent, you're an automatic fan, so to speak, of your child, but now it's a relationship that does matter, that does count, you know, and you're, so there's just so much there. And I say, I don't care who you are or what walk of life you come from. Every parent is at risk of losing control and perspective, every one of them. So if you can be open enough to learn, then we can have a conversation, right? And I can certainly best support you in terms of supporting your athlete and raising an elite athlete. Unfortunately, in the case with Riley, it's a different name, but it is a true story. The parent was not workable. They could not see beyond what they saw, and they weren't willing to open that up or see that any other way. So there's no point in that situation. And then my work is with Riley, so to speak, in terms of, you know, you don't need to own that. It doesn't belong to you. And now how do we manage your reaction and your response to it? So that's really what we do.
Nice. That makes a lot of sense. And I guess you being a parent with boys in hockey, it would probably be hard to turn a blind eye to some of the things that you would see in the arena. And I remember a couple of years back, CBC did a survey looking at, they called it rink rage. And it was, I think that one of the stats was about 50% of kids, of youth, witnessed a parent or an adult verbally abusing either a ref, a coach, or another child. How did you manage that as a parent? I guess knowing what you know as a social worker and as a mental performance coach.
You know, I try to, I wear a lot of different hats, right? I think from being a professional in the field and also as a mom too, being a mom to my kids and a sports mom as well. You know, interestingly enough, it's actually been better because I do spend a lot of time in the rinks. And, you know, I think at one point, I don't think I made it through a single year where I did not see the police call to the rink at least once a year to deal with something. So, yeah, there's lots of stuff. I saw all the things that, that you're talking about. But I always tried to see, like, what hat am I wearing in that space? And so if I'm a mom, then I'm going to just be a mom, you know? And I have sometimes worked with my son's teams as well. So, you know, if the coach wants my help because I'm working with the team as well, then I will step in. But from the mom perspective, I try to be a mom. And if it's a professional role that I'm wearing or that hat that day, then I will be a professional. So that's kind of how I try to deal with it. My son, you know, and if I don't, or I cross the line, my son, both my boys will be the first to tell me, you know, so they really hold me accountable to that as well.
Nice. Well, I guess you have to have good boundaries that way. And and if you don't, then they'll put them in place for you.
For sure. And listen, I will be honest too, as a parent, you know, a lot of the things that I've created now and some of the stuff that I'm working on now is really to help support parents and coaches as well. Because I've done a lot of work and, you know, I've worked at every level right now from, you know, youth sport, amateur, college sport, Olympic sport, NHL, NFL, like, you know, the whole range of things. And so, you know, my next goal is to really, how do I create greater impact? You know, I always say at the end of the day, I'm one person and I do tend to be a little bit all over the place. And so I really want to be able to spread my message. You know, when you ask me how I got to where I am, it has been through a lot of trial and error and, you know, putting together also my experiences as a professional, my experiences as a parent, and the years of experience that I have had at all these different levels. And so my mission now is to really spread impact and really create a positive impact in the world of sport. And I see that through touch points with parents and also with the coaches. You touched a little bit on changing culture from old school to this kind of new school. And so I feel that my ability to be able to spread my knowledge and experience with parents and coaches and help them to pull this all together and really support and raise elite athletes in the best way possible is something that I'm really encouraged to do, because then they'll have greater impact on all the athletes that they touch. That's something that I'm really motivated and working on right now, is to be able to share that.
Well, one of the things that stuck out the most from your book was that activity that you do with coaches where you give them a cue card at the beginning and ask them to write down, why do you do what you do? And then bringing that out later in your training with them to ask them if their behaviors and actions on a day-to-day basis are matching, I guess, their values of coaching. Yeah. I love that activity. And it sounds like it's really helped a lot of people to take a good look in the mirror and assess, you know, whether their behaviors are matching what they're set out to do and their goals.
Yes.
What advice do you have or tips for parents that want to support their athlete children?
Yeah, I would say, you know, you've touched on it. The first key thing for me is self-awareness, is take a step back and look in the mirror. You know, what is it that you're putting out there? Like, what do you want? Because they can be really clear on what they want and they're going to say all these beautiful things. And I believe that. But then does it match? Like, do your behaviors match? You know, you touched on the car ride home, and I call it the dreaded car ride home, right? Which every kid and athlete just dreads, you know, the whole post-game analysis in the car. And, you know, all of a sudden the parent is the expert and they're going through their whole game analysis. And, you know, I mean, that's one thing I'll tell them is let's stop that for sure. But it's really gaining awareness. You know, what is it that you put out there? What type of sports parent? You know, in my work with parents, I've created 10 different type of sports parents to help identify who are you. You know, you'll find yourself in there somewhere, and starting to recognize the behaviors they put out there. And if they can't identify it for themselves, like I said, just ask your child, because they will know. They will be able to tell you what that impact is. And I think by hearing it and recognizing it just allows us to grow. And, you know, I did say it's a recipe for a perfect storm. Every parent is at risk. You know, I will be honest. There have been times when I'm sitting in arena and, you know, out of my mouth, you know, I might yell something to the ref, like, well, are you kidding me? And then I think, oh my God, you know, what am I doing? Right. We're human. We're all human, and it's emotional and intense. And so the more aware you can become, the more power you have to do something with it. So that's always the first key for me, is self-awareness. Look in the mirror, ask your child, you know, what is it that I do that helps you? What is it that you don't like? What would you like me to change? You'll get the best information. You know, it's so valuable. And then is going to be willing to grow. Be willing to learn. You're not expected to have all the answers, right? I always say, like, I wouldn't have a job if everybody could figure it out themselves. But have an openness to learn and to grow and, you know, gain support. I'm super excited right now because I'm building an online community for parents and coaches. And it's going to be a community where it's like-minded people that can support each other, that can relate to what you're going through. And there's going to be content there, like, from me and resources, and I'm going to do Q&As and webinars on a monthly basis, and it's not expensive, you know, so they're just, you can read that, there'll be all the information there for you to find on your own. You can have a touch point with me. So there's huge opportunity to learn and just really be the best that you can be. And that's going to empower your child to be the best that they can be. So
I think that's amazing. And such a need for parents and coaches to have those types of resources.
And there's nothing really like it, you know, there's nothing out there. So yeah, something I'm super excited about launching.
These 10 types of parents, I'm curious, can you get just name a couple of them?
Sure. So there's the anxious parent, the parent that is, you know, sitting in the stands and that is so worried about their kid making a mistake or getting the ice time or what's going to happen. And they just, it all comes from a good place. They just want their child to succeed and to do well, but you know, they're holding their breath, and you know, when their kid's on the ice and you can just see it. All you have to do is watch their body language and you'll find the anxious parent in the stands. That's one of them. Then there's the coach parent, you know, the parent that thinks they have all the answers and is coaching their kid in the car, telling their kid what they should do on the ice and the whole post-game analysis. And, you know, often that's completely different from what the coach wants. And that's really confusing to the kids. So the coach parent is another one. You know, are you always instructing and coaching your child? And another one, kind of this, I find one of the most interesting ones, which is the covert agent parent. Which is kind of it's almost like the secret agent, the one that's very pleasant and, you know, engaging with all the parents, but it's like they have their own hidden agenda. So they tend to be behind the scenes, like relentless on their kid, driving them really hard. they're in the coach's ear, like telling the coach what they should be doing, you know, what's working, what's not working.
Is there an ideal parent? Like, is there?
Yeah. There's just the supportive parent.
Okay.
That's the ideal parent type, which is, you know, they're an advocate for their child when they need to be, but really they're their child's biggest supporter, and they support learning and opportunity and growth. And, you know, the biggest feature for that parent is they've got to do their research, like research the team, research the coach, find out the information. Like, that's your job to do. But when you make a commitment to a team, you know, you should have done all your research prior. At that point, your job is to release your child, you know, to the team, to support the team, to support the coach in their mission, to support your child to figure out answers when things are not going well, not to have them all, but to encourage that thinking, and, you know, to ask questions and to love and to be there and to cheer them on, really.
Sounds really nice. That does sound ideal.
It is ideal. And, you know, it's a lot harder to do, you know, easier to say than to do. But that's why we all need work. You know, we all need work in everything. And look, I've sort of hit the top of my career. But I still say, like, I am absolutely a forever learner of the game of sport. I learn every single day and I want to grow. Every day I look for an opportunity to learn something new or get better at something. And I learn every day from the athletes that I work with, from the parents, from the teams. Like, you know, I'm still forever learning. So I really just encourage parents to do the same and athletes to do the same.
Well, in that mindset right there, I guess we're going to touch on that, the growth mindset, in a minute here. Yeah. Let's talk about Jack first, another character in your book. I think he was a goalie. He came from the States and he gets drafted to play in Canada, but he gets kind of stuck on a team with a really abusive coach who expects him to be perfect. How do you help athletes to let go of their expectations and perfectionistic qualities?
So, you know, you're touching on two different things, right? Is it their own expectations and perfectionistic qualities, which we see a lot, or is it somebody else putting it on you? So distinguishing that difference is something that I would look at initially. And then if it's their own, it's really about flushing them out, you know, starting to hear them and write them down. And, you know, when you kind of brainstorm it and put it down, it takes on a life of its own, because it sounds like they almost hear it themselves. They're like, wow, like that sounds crazy, right? And I'll just challenge it with them and say, you know, find me somebody on your team that does these things. Well, they can't. Okay, let's go, you know, let's go up a level. Let's go to the pro levels. Find me someone. Well, they can't. Well, then how on earth are you expected to do it, right? So firstly, I just really try to shed some light on the fact that they're completely unrealistic, and that they will, while they use it to drive themselves, it's hurting them way more than it's ever helping them. And so we shed some light, and when they actually can see that for themselves, that becomes a powerful moment, and then we can start working with it. So then we'll work to replace it, you know, what's a more productive thought process, what makes more sense for you. And so we really kind of go through that. And then their job is, you know, so I say first, really, it's to educate them. Like, I'll do a lot of teaching about the growth mindset. So we educate, and then we start to break it down. We educate them, we analyze their mindset, like I just described to you. And then we challenge and replace it. And then their job is to live it. So that's really, if I would say, you know, moving into that growth mindset, it's going to be those four pillars, four pieces to do. They got to have the information and understanding. They have to then apply it to themselves. Then we challenge it, and then we try to live it. So that's, nice. Yeah.
And you take a cognitive behavioral therapy perspective or approach to these things, and that really helps. I mean, it just makes so much sense to do that.
Yeah, I think that's different too. You know, there is, like, there's a lot of mental performance coaches out there, and And I, to be honest, I think that's a piece of what has made my work so successful is, you know, mental performance coaching is full of strategies and behavioral techniques, and they're great. Don't get me wrong. Like, I use them for sure. But I do tend to go a lot deeper because I feel like if you don't fix the underlying root of the problem, then they're almost more band-aid solutions. You know, like, I love what you're talking about in terms of injury and trauma, is it goes deeper. And so having that background as a psychotherapist, I think, just allows me another layer. And I tend to go deeper. And I think that is what truly impacts change. You know, at the end of my book, I talk about, you know, there's a ton of motivation. My book is just one of them. And I do try to give practical strategies and things that people can put into action right away, because action is so key for me. I find so many people get stuck on all these motivational quotes and kind of this rah-rah motivation, but until you're willing to take action, nothing changes. So, you know, I could have written the best book in the world, but until you're willing to do something with it, we don't go anywhere. And I think adding that other layer, that deeper work, getting to the root of the issues, is really what kind of propels growth and change. So I think that's key.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if this is sort of the same question as we talked about with Riley's father, but do you have any tips or wisdom for helping athletes to deal with abusive coaches like Jack?
Yeah.
Said in your book.
Yeah, I think when it's placed on you, right? That's why we're always distinguishing the difference. So, I mean, the athletes tend to own it, but where is the source, right? Where is it really coming from? And so I definitely will first try to separate those two pieces. And then when you recognize that it's somebody putting their stuff on you, and, you know, something that I tell athletes all the time, and it's, you know, it's true, just because somebody is a parent and somebody's a coach, it does not mean that they're always appropriate, right? They're human, just like me, just like you, and we all make mistakes. Now, it's great to have an athlete or coach that takes accountability and recognizes that, but sometimes we just don't get that. And so at that point, it's their job to recognize that this is not about them. And it doesn't mean it's okay, and it doesn't mean that it's right. And so my work then becomes helping them to recognize that and to not own it, that it's not their stuff. And we kind of, how do we throw it back? And so it's really about controlling your reaction and your response to it and having a different understanding and perspective on it. So that's really what I do.
I imagine there's a lot of education that would have to go into kind of it's depersonalizing the abuse.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And it's a hard thing to do. But the amazing thing is, and what I have found, you know, I had been asked a long time ago to do a really young group of kids. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is like, they're way too young for this. But it's been amazing in my work too. And I still sometimes love getting the little ones, you know, because when you get them young, and parents will call me too and say, you know, my kid is, you know, whatever age, you know, is it too young to start? And it's really not, because the younger you get them, you can educate them, you can teach them. And what it does is give them a different perspective, so that when something's happening, they have a new way of looking at it, as opposed to years and years of that type of abuse. And it's really deeply ingrained and it's a lot harder to change. So there's so much educational pieces to this. And when you educate, whether it's a coach, whether it's a parent, whether it's the athlete, but when you get them young and you teach them the right perspective, they kind of go through the world of sport and they actually see it differently. So when it's happening to them, they get it. They're like, oh, this isn't about me. Like, that's your stuff. You know, like, we'll talk about what is the role of a coach. Okay. Well, a coach is to teach, it's to develop their athletes. It's, you know, to inspire, it's to bring a team together, all the things. And then we'll match up that behavior too. Well, does this match? And just helping them understand that that's not really, you know, maybe the coach has good motivation or intention, but as an adult, that's not the right way to get it. But that doesn't belong to them. So
Yeah. I like that approach. And I guess it's hard to, I mean, there's a lot of coaches that are former NHL players and very successful hockey players. And, you know, naturally players idolize them. And, and I guess that's maybe a barrier to some of this depersonalizing or being able to compartmentalize this or, you know, it's not about me. I guess that's maybe just one piece of this that makes it a little bit difficult to do that work.
Yeah, it's one piece. And that's why, you know, it's when I say like now my mission is to just impact the world of sport and to, you know, empower potential in people. And there are many layers to that for me. And that's why it's coach, it's athlete, and it's parent. And I think that when it's that's a kind of a triangle, when we can work, all three of those pieces need to be working well in order to empower people's full potential. And yeah, we got to target all layers. I think it's very important.
No, it makes good sense. And let's, so the third player and just kind of the last character that I was hoping to talk to you about was Amy in your book. And Amy's the volleyball player who just has this negative belief that she's not good enough.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how you help athletes move from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset and just what goes into that work with athletes?
Yeah. So Amy was very fixed mindset. Amy was somebody that got by on talent. You know, one of the first things that, and I say it all the time, I almost sound like a broken record, but talent is very overrated for me. And sometimes can be a curse, because when you have this natural God-given talent, if you don't have the right education, the right support, the right backing, and you're getting by just purely on your talent because you just happen to be better than everybody else, and that was the situation with Amy. She just was miles ahead of everyone, and so she was you know, recognized for that, and everybody would talk about her being so good. And so she became very fixed in her mindset. She relied on her talent, but that was a setup, because now if she made a mistake or something went wrong and, you know, she started to worry about what people would think or not being good enough or other people catching up to her. So it was really a huge issue for her, and just held her back from growing or developing. So, you know, I'll come back to what I told you is that education piece. I teach a lot about the growth mindset and the fixed mindset. So just helping people understand what it is and the thought processes behind it, the behavioral results and consequences that come out of the different scenarios. So it's a lot of teaching initially. And then we'll take it out and we'll kind of look into the world and look at athletes that have succeeded or people that succeed. And, you know, I love finding inspirational stories, and I challenge people to do that too. And they tend to have a growth mindset, right? So we'll look for stories. I'll share my own story as well, like, you know, in terms of how I grow. And so we try and make it very relatable. I give them homework assignments to find somebody that's inspiring for them. And then we'll actually break down their mindset and what we can learn and know about them. And, you know, you'll start to see that common theme of their attitude, their response, their reaction, their growth mindset. So we move from the educating piece, and then we move into the analyzing piece. Now that we see it out there in the world, we understand it, you know, because it often makes sense to them intellectually, right? Like, I get it, but how do I actually change it? Like, I feel this way and it's threatening to me. How do I change it? So the education piece first, so they get it, and then we move into the analyzing piece. So we start to really break it down and analyze the impact that it has and the scenarios that they come up with in their life. And, you know, as we continue our work and we'll go through those scenarios, they will come up. And so now we start to break them down and we start to look at it. And we start to see what the consequences of that thought process is and what it's doing for them, you know, because I always say to them, hey, if you can prove to me that this works for you, like, I'm all in. I support it 100%, you know, and they laugh because they can't. So when they really personalize it and see that it's hurting them more than it's helping them, they're a lot more open to changing it. And then again, we try to apply what we've learned and we put it to their situation. And then they got to try it, and then we get to talk about it again. And so how did that work? Oh, well, you know, still didn't work great, but maybe I wasn't as upset with myself. Okay, well, that's better than what we were getting before. And, you know, progress becomes a powerful motivator. So I really build off starting to apply it and then having them live it. And then we work through it again and picking out the little wins and you know, I say stacking those wins and just, okay, well, that was the step. And so how do we take another one? And it's them actually living it and feeling the difference that makes the difference. Right. Well, and
yeah. And I love how you're breaking this down and really making it clear that this is a process and this isn't happening overnight.
Yeah.
And you know, that I think that's really helpful advice for people working with athletes too, to there's pressure on us to be helping them like quickly. And there's a lot of stakeholders and agents and pressure to get things back to normal. And I just like how you really break this down and you help them understand that this is step by step and we're going to fail along the way, which is all part of the growth mindset.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in the book, you have some of these and you talk about inspirational quotes, but hearing about professional athletes and famous people, maybe, or very successful people failing, getting fired from jobs, getting cut from teams. Mm. Those are great little tidbits.
Yeah, all the time. And, you know, it's fun to do with them too. Like I'll give them a story and, you know, they're always kind of wowed by that. Did you know that? And I'll challenge them. That's their homework. You know, next week you come back with a story and gosh, I get to learn the best stories. They come up with amazing things and, you know, they're fascinating for both of us. And, you know, we learn together. So it really, really is a process. And you do raise a great point. And something that I have found is people tend to want a quick fix. And it's sort of one of the problems with our society right now. You know, everything's kind of instant gratification and, okay, you know, here's this athlete or here's my kid, fix them. And, you know, it's something that I do say right away. It's not a quick fix. And the mind is a muscle the same way your body is a muscle. And so to try and make it relatable to them, you know, I'll ask them like in the gym, how long does it take till you notice a difference, you know? And if you also, you can work all summer, you can work in the off season and, you know, you can put on 10 pounds of muscle and, but that took, you know, 4 or 5 months of blood, sweat, and tears every single day, you know, working it and strengthening it. And then what happens if you take 2 weeks off? Like athletes feel their conditioning changes in 2 weeks. So the same thing with the mind. It's a muscle. We need to work it. And it's going to take time and practice and repetition until it actually gets stronger. And then we need to continue working it. Like it's an ongoing process. You know, an athlete who wins a gold medal in the Olympics does not stop training or practicing. They continue to work it and grow it. And the mind is exactly the same way. So if we, you know, we need the time to strengthen it and we need to the time to continue working on it. And if we don't, then we're going to fall backwards. So same thing.
That's perfect. No, that's a great analogy, talking about it as a muscle. And on that note, what advice and wisdom do you have for new social workers, therapists, mental health professionals that want to work with athletes or are working with athletes?
Yeah. Well, it's grow every day, just like I say, you know, mentor, get a mentor and networking. So, you know, I think that's so key. It's so key for me and my success. And I think for anybody to achieve success is the willingness to continue learning and growing and having the right mentorship and the ability to network. So, you know, again, that's something that in this new online community that I'm working on right now, which is going to be launching at the end of September, early October, we have a stream for professionals as well. So there's content there, right? Like just articles and videos, and you can read them and learn from them and you can use them in presentations. Again, webinars, Q&As with me, and it doesn't have to be me or my platform, but it's find somebody that is doing what you want to do, that has achieved success already in the area that you want to be in. And, you know, try and for a mentor, bring value to them so that they will work with you because they're already in the space that you want to be in. I mean, what better way to learn than there? So that's how I would talk about finding a mentor, and just the ability to network with people, to meet people. Again, one of the reasons why I'm putting this community out is bringing like-minded people together where we support each other. You know, for so long I've been doing this on my own, and I really believe we're so much more powerful together by sharing information and, you know, having a group of people with the same type of mission in mind. And I think when we can pull that all together, and share knowledge and expertise, then, you know, sky's the limit. So,
and that's a perfect segue into kind of, I want to close with talking about the Mind Gym, because that's a really cool thing that you're doing, and your book and your website and this new platform that you're developing. Can you kind of put some plugs in here for these things that you're offering?
What plugs? What do you mean?
Can you, well, I guess Fearless, that's your book.
My book.
That's available on Amazon. This new platform, when is it launching? Yeah. This for parents, coaches, professionals?
Yeah, it's going to launch. My target is the end of September. And I'm so excited about it. I'm also launching a new online course for coaches and professionals, actually, that do work with teams. So those are the two things that are coming out first. The course is like actually a 5-session done for you, package where coaches can take it and actually introduce, because I can't do all the teams anymore. So we get called all the time, but now I've created the course where coaches themselves can take it. It's going to have all the presentation slides for 5 complete sessions. It's going to have video tutorial by me. It's going to have workbooks and PDFs. It's going to have all the activities that they can do with their team. So really it's a done for you 5-session mental performance program that coaches or other people in the field can take themselves and they can do and implement with their team. So that's going to be amazing. And then the community for coaches, parents, and professionals is an online platform. It's not expensive. It's like $39.99 a month or $3.99 for an entire year. And it's going to be building, like I say, resources, content, I just want to fill it with value, and I will have a touch point with everybody there. And also it's a great networking opportunity. So, the end of September, early October, set to launch
soon.
Yeah.
And this will be all on your website.
It's all, yeah. I've got a new website. We have the Heads Up High Performance website, which is my company website. That's where the Mind Gym is and all of our programming and clinics and, stuff like that. So you can check out Heads Up High Performance website, but also I'm building out my personal website, which is brenleeshapiro.com. And that's where you'll find the community and all the online courses that will be available. So yeah, it's coming soon. I always say just get on my mailing list, like, because then at least you'll find out everything that's going on and keep aware of all the different things, because there's lots of exciting things to come. So yeah.
That sounds awesome. So much is coming in the next month or two.
Yeah.
Do you have one more minute to talk about the Mind Gym?
Sure.
Okay. Can you explain what that is? It was, going on your website and seeing that was the first I have ever heard of it. And it looks awesome.
Yeah. So it's the Mind Gym is a sports vision and cognitive training center. It's kind of cutting edge. It's really fascinating work. Everything we've been talking about from the sports psychology perspective, when I talk about the Mind Gym, I say it's literally the science behind everything we've been talking about today. So we have the ability to train the relationship between the eyes, the brain, and the body to enhance performance. So like I say, the mind is a muscle, and the brain is the most powerful instrument in your entire body. It's the command center. It controls everything that we do. So why wouldn't we strengthen that? So this is literally the gym that will exercise that muscle. So what we do is we work the muscles of the eyes, because in sport, the eyes are the gateway. The eyes are what's taking in all the visual cues. They're bringing the information into the brain. So we are working the muscles of the eyes to draw information into the brain at a quicker rate. To span your field of vision, right? So that you could be focused in one area, but it's literally a muscle to see further over there. So instead of, you know, having to turn and look, you're going to pick up the information that's going on over there. And then we literally exercise the brain to process at a quicker rate, so the body can react quicker and more effectively. We call it the 1 second advantage, right? See more, think quicker, react 1 split second faster than everybody else, and think about what an edge that gives you in terms of performance. So it's literally like a gym to work out your eyes and your brain. It's circuit training. We work on focus and concentration, peripheral awareness, decision-making under stress and pressure, anticipation time, reaction and response time. And, you know, people have always said, like, you can't train hockey IQ or sports IQ, game IQ. Well, you actually can. So see more, think quicker, react faster, just how to process all those cues. So that's what we do in the Mind Gym.
So cool. Well, I'm going to put some links up for your websites on in the show notes for the episode. And it's been really nice talking to you. And thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule.
It's my pleasure. It's nice talking to you too. And I'm always, you know, excited with people that want to dive in and just be on the same mission. So good for you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Brenly.